Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Good morning, everybody. Today is January 22. It's Monday morning. It's a great day to start the week. It's been around for a long time, so it's nothing new. But I think the most exciting thing is, and, you know, time passes by very, very quickly. And John and I, John Daly, the White Plains Citizenet reporter, publisher, and editor, and I began 24, 25 years ago in the business of the online newspaper business. And Scarsdale Today was involved. Sean Cover was the owner of that. And he was the guy who had the capacity to put the websites together. So the three of us got online. So we had Scarsdale, we had White Plains, we had Yonkers Tribune, and we're still all here, which is really unbelievable. But the thing that I've been delinquent in mentioning for a long time, evidently, is that there are over 933,195 visitors a week that go and visit the White Plains Citizenet Reporter. It is WPCNR.com. It's absolutely mind-boggling. Who would think that so many people visit the site? And 3 million visits in 2023. This is like,
right.
It seems absurd, John, but it is so brilliant because you've accomplished so much.
Well, I tell things that people don't get from the regular news media. And
exactly.
Gives them information. Like, I have thousands of visitors from Russia, of all people.
Isn't that amazing?
And Red China and...
Yeah, Red China too, me too. I don't know. I didn't even know that they could translate all this English into Chinese, into Russian. I mean, I know they can, but I didn't know they would be interested.
In the, you know, in UK, in Canada, and, you know, and I wonder why would they do this? What is it that we are giving them, you know?
Well, I think it's all comparison to see what's going on in the world and how different communities and societies and nations contend with different challenges, how they do it, and so on and so forth. And I think it really is, we've become much more global and less, less self-engaged than we've ever been. And so we become much larger. It's a larger community. Now it's like the earth as opposed to a particular nation like China or the United States or Great Britain or South Africa or, you know, places in South America, Argentina, Brazil. It's times have changed. Maybe we've gotten smarter.
I also think we're like the Voice of America, you know. I think we're sort of like the Voice of America used to be. People would... Behind the Iron Curtain, which still exists, never went away. And people behind them were hungry for what it was like for something different than their dreary existence. And what is now happening is that America as a nation is forgetting the way we used to be. And I was thinking yesterday, we were discussing on the phone, by the way, I want to tell everybody that Hezzy is back again on the air on a Monday. He's had health problems, which he is administering, but this show is so important to him that he is doing it. And he is, because he realizes it is important to tell people like it is.
We don't have that. You know, it seems like we're an old crowd of people. We are old. I don't know about you, but I'm already 73 years of age. And what's fascinating is that there's a different demeanor that's coming about in new reporters. It just seems There seems also to be more of a get-along type of attitude I'm starting to see. And so there isn't a lot of introspection. And I think we're still part of that world where we try to decipher what's really going on and to look at what's at play, what's the catalyst that's causing this, that, or the other. We haven't had that in a long time.
Yes, however, there is a great deal of very bad editorial decisions being made around the country by editors in what they cover. And I noticed that today from what else but the New York Times when they did a corruption story about Nikki Haley.
Yeah.
Front page. And I'm saying, what is the purpose of that? That woman is the only hope. That is the only hope for saving America from a dictatorship. This is what it will be next January if a certain person wins the presidency.
Well, that's what's so interesting with DeSantis just pulled out of the race, the governor of Florida. So he and Nikki Haley, I think the fact that she's a woman helps her. I would hope so. And that women will gather around her in support of her campaign. And because I think we need to get a woman's voice, and we also need to get people in government who are not 80 years of age. They're beyond the time when most of us die. You know, it's hard to be 80 years of age. Why would we want to elect somebody in office, whether it be Biden or whether it be Trump, who are in their 80s, for what purpose? What are they bringing to the equation? We need somebody who's young, who's aware and engaged, and also someone who's respectful. We don't have respect.
No, respect is common. We don't respect our enemies. We don't listen to their views, and we just diss them, to use a younger person's word. And that may be behind the times now, the word diss. But, I mean, also, the problem with people growing really old, unless they continue to grow in perspective, keep thinking they're just as young as they always were. They make a serious mistake in that. They have to adjust to what was, see what is happening, and look ahead. And they don't look ahead. I mean, I feel that the Biden team that is running his administration is behind the times. They have no campaign out there. They have no campaign. Yeah. They don't realize that they cannot rely on the minority votes like they used to. Why? Because they haven't really done anything for minorities lately.
Correct.
And the minorities are really hurting. The minorities have not gotten the message that a vote for Trump is putting the shackles of slavery back on them. And that's what it
is. Absolutely.
Yeah. And
I still can't fathom why is it that the administration hasn't done a better job in promoting its positive impact on the economy? Why don't they write more about it? They have all the possibility in the world to get news out. It's not like they're cloistered in any way, shape, or form. So why aren't they doing the job?
I believe the media, the big-time media, we're talking Los Angeles Times, Washington Post, New York Times, Chicago Tribune, and the big city papers play both ends against the middle. They want to be objective, and however, they put something about Trump on the front page every day.
Exactly, they do.
They don't have to. That is an editorial decision. And they want to, at least when the Trump administration gets into office next year, say, well, we really treated you fairly and both sides. In other words, the big time money behind and corporations behind the big time press, you know, the national press and television stations and networks, they want to appear to be fair to him. But it's just a matter of hedging your bets. It's what I know people who give money to both parties just so they say, well, we supported you. And you should never give to a party that doesn't have a good message. But they don't.
Absolutely.
It's all about themselves.
Well, you know, I mean, Trump has become a cult figure. And I don't think there's any way to diminish his supporters. They feel challenged by supporting him, so they're going to be quite stalwart in what they do, and they believe in him. I can't respect an individual who has power such as Donald Trump does, a great influence. He's earned it, whether you approve or disapprove. The point is, he's got name recognition. But I can't understand why a man of such clout on the international as well as the national stage, why he needs to demean people or why he needs to name call them. What's the point? And why does that reverberate within the people that support him? I just don't get it. Where's the civility?
That's what they would like to do. His supporters admire his gut for challenging authority. They admire his guts for saying that someone who is to blame for their plight. When what you have to be taught, what you have to teach your kids, is that you are responsible for your own performance. You can't blame somebody if you fall short. Now, what Mr. Trump does, he has reversed that. He has made it a truism that if you're in a bad spot, it's because somebody is putting you there, and you have to fight back. And this is insidiously clever because it's a real good out for the person who may not be as successful, that likes guns, likes to hunt. I'm just generalizing here. But even if you're a parent and you don't like certain things being presented to your kids in school, or if you believe in the Confederacy's stance for slavery, not that I can believe it, because I think they really think that was good, but then that is my prejudice. I always pay interns when they write for me, because I think internship is modern slavery. Pay them.
Exactly. They need to be
paid.
That's
what internship really is. It's free labor.
That's correct.
They don't whip them or anything or put them in chains. But they take advantage of their talent.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And
when
they mask
go
it
wrong,
as
there
good.
Used to be, go ahead.
They mask it
I'm
as
sorry,
good.
John.
Yeah,
they mask,
mask
it as good. It's all camouflage.
Right.
Yeah.
They mask.
It's like the sleight of hand. It's like a magician. And they get away with a lot of this stuff. I don't know how we changed. Have I gotten so old that I'm unaware of? There used to be a time when we would inculcate and we would engage and we would talk to different issues. And now you've got to be on one side or another in order to be acceptable and or accepted in society. And where's the discourse? We don't have challenge. And you know what? We become. I don't know what we become, but we're not hearing the concerns of our society, and we're not challenged by the issues in society, and we're not moving in the right direction because we don't understand one another. And I don't know how we got to this point. We used to have a lot better opportunity to understand, despite the bigotry. I mean, I can't deny the fact that there was a tremendous amount of bigotry and bias in this country. But I guess that's in every society, but the fact that we're not talking to one another makes it even worse. And it just keeps on, you know, increasing, and more people feel ostracized. We're not moving ahead. I don't understand why.
Yeah, that's because we're falling into, if we don't do anything, no one will get mad at us when we'll be re-elected syndrome.
Yeah, that's true.
And Congress is like that. Congress,
yeah.
That's the way Congress treats everything. They got to just pass the next election and not say anything bad that will cost them votes.
Exactly.
And they're opportunistic.
Absolutely,
I mean,
as well.
You know, Jamal Bowman makes a very altruistic statement, and he has now become the enemy of very powerful Jewish lobbies.
Yes.
And we have a county executive who is now challenging him in a primary. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, I never thought he'd do that.
But you never what?
I never thought he would do that, you know, primary bone, because he'd be for the wrong reasons.
Yeah, I don't, you know, both of their candidacies are not, haven't, somehow they haven't engaged me so much, because I saw them hiding out in the political arena. So I didn't see them making bold moves or making any moves and explaining themselves better. And that's what I expected. But it does seem like Latimer just got an endorsement from, what's her name now? She's a
Shelley
senator. Shelley
Mayer.
I don't know where we're going, but I think we're disenfranchising a lot of people because we're not having discussions that go to the concerns of the public interest, even though some people don't like the issues, some people do like the issues, and we've got to get beyond the bias and bigotry. I never really thought that with the Emancipation Proclamation, which was in the 60s, that we would still be battling this issue today. It's unbelievable.
Well, because it's been politicized by persons who should know better.
Exactly.
And I also question where are the Dr. Martin Luther Kings of today? We've just passed Dr. Martin Luther King's birthday, which was hardly
mentioned
in
or noted.
Press. And I always do, because I thought he was one of the bravest persons that ever walked the planet. And it cost
Absolutely.
Him his life being so brave and outspoken, and he was clever. He hit the rich and the bigoted in their pocketbook. With his boycott strategy. That's why they finally passed the segregation of schools, and that's why Jim Crow died, or supposedly did. But now it's being brought back big time as something that was good, which it was not. And to my way of thinking, this is what gets in the way. The congressmen and most singularly the new Speaker of the House, which has had 2 weeks after his great compromise on the lifting of the debt ceiling, and his next thing was to call a conference with the Democrats on the immigration policy, but he doesn't want to do that because that is really a controversy and has. People have to come out and say, I don't believe in this because these Latinos aren't contributing to the country, or the Muslims aren't, or the, you know what? They do contribute to the country.
Yeah, they do. Absolutely.
They really do. And we need their employment because the birth rate is so down in the white population, which it is. And This is a major, major problem, labor force in this country. If you do not hire immigrants, if you don't make it possible for these thousands down there in New York that could be sleeping on the streets in 18-degree weather,
yes.
You don't hear about that. I mean, I remember
no.
when the Times used to run pictures of sleeping on the street homeless people. But I don't do
yes.
that.
No. I don't know why we've sanitized the news and reality. We're living in a world of cover-up,
mm-hmm.
and we used to have much more, we just had much better insight, and people were not afraid to point out the perspective and the issues. And today we seem like we just can't seem to get the energy to do it right. I don't know what went wrong with us.
We are losing the great editors.
Yeah, that's
there's nobody
true.
Stands up there like Humphrey Bogart did in the movie Deadline USA when
mm-hmm.
he was investigating corruption, and he has the last line in the movie was when he holds the phone of the governor or whoever it was that he was investigating.
Yeah.
He said, "Listen to that sound, baby. That is the press, and it's polling."
Yeah.
I'm paraphrasing, and that's what the press used to do. Now they look for sensationalism.
Yes, that's amazing. That's really what's happened. Yeah.
The greatest. That's the. And also, another great movie, talking about what it's like to be a reporter, is The Front Page with Cary Grant and Rosalind Russell. And
oh
that
yes,
inspired
that's right.
That inspires you, and the chemistry of a work environment when you're working with somebody is so evident. One of the greatest threats is you get working with a member of the opposite sex who brings out the best in you professionally.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It is a tremendous feeling, and
absolutely,
and that's why good things happen in the workplace. But at any rate, I digress. But that is what it is.
But you're on target.
Yeah, but I mean, today, if a politician says someone is a really great reporter and he's well-respected and all that, well, he may be a respected journalist, but a respected journalist is not a great reporter.
Mm-hmm.
You earn the respect of the rich and the powerful by playing ball.
That's the problem. So now we're just salivating at the dollar or whatever
yeah.
currency.
Right. I mean, you can write books. And, you know, I love Gail Collins and David Brooks in their
yes.
conversation comms, which is the best
mm-hmm.
thing you can read in the op-ed page, because they have a discussion about
yes, exactly.
which is what Congress should be doing. And, you know, they're both brilliant people. And, you know, I find that is what needs to be done. I need to hear what Republicans think about immigration and not just
exactly.
building a wall. But how do we bring these people in and treat them like human beings?
Absolutely.
They don't.
Well, that's the problem.
We're not
finding direction from the people that are in elected office or
mm-hmm.
in positions of power who can show us the direction that is humane and just and credible.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have that sort of intonation in their demeanor, and so we don't see it. We used to have examples of great people, you know, like the Martin Luther Kings of the world, President Kennedy, and so on and so forth. You just don't
yeah.
have that. We're just kissing people's rear ends for what reason, I don't know. But we need
another
to hear the truth,
is,
and we're not getting it.
Yeah, another thing is that presidents have to be more supportive of their vice presidents. And nowhere
Absolutely.
Is that hurting the nation more than Biden's treatment of Kamala Harris as vice president. She hasn't been given
exactly.
a role. They never hold press conferences together and have her
never.
Take a question. Never. He just, it's all about him.
Yeah.
And that it has really hurt Kamala Harris's standing in the nation, and she is hurting the ticket. And of course, if Biden loses, they can blame her. Well, we shouldn't have gone on that. But I mean,
yeah.
that's it's an out. And Ms.
Yeah.
Harris, quite frankly, is playing ball. I mean, but it's just. It's humiliating to spend 3 years of her life doing nothing.
Absolutely. Well, I guess she mm-hmm. thinks that there's no way to challenge the president, and she doesn't have the internal fortitude to move independently of him and to make her own road for
the
future.
But she can compliment him. When he has a fumble, she can immediately pick up the ball if she's by his side. And, you know,
yeah.
Joe, you're absolutely right. And do it that way. But that's too creative for a politician.
Yeah, exactly.
To do. It's all about him, or it's all about her. Look at Marjorie Taylor
yeah.
Greene. I can't believe she's as bad as she
mm-hmm.
makes out in what she says. But then
yeah.
that is a trap. Many people who say horrible things are that bad because that's what they really believe.
Exactly.
But we're not getting that reality doesn't get distilled for the reader, for the listener. We don't have the complexity that we used to have even 10 or 15 or 20 years ago. And I don't know. And I guess it was influence, financial influence over the system. And literally, the media has been bought and sold. And they're just impotent at this point. There's very
Big
little impact from the media.
Big-time story in the business section today of the Times about the guy who owns Sinclair Broadcasting, purchased the Baltimore
yes.
Sun. And
yes.
this guy is a right-wing enthusiast, to say the least, and he owns 700 television stations. This shows you what has happened in the last 40 years. You cannot
exactly.
have any ownership owning that many stations. It's too influential. But that is allowed. Now, I don't know what president changed that rule, but it used to be in radio, you could only own maybe 7 stations.
Correct. I remember those days.
Yeah. And now we have conglomerates buying radio stations all over the place, making enormous amounts of money by making them all sports stations or conservative radio stations, but don't
yeah.
have any news operations.
Correct. Absolutely not.
And that has really hurt the media. Media credibility and the ability to inform, and that's another
factor.
It's
become a business, and the business marginalizes reporting to such an extent that we just don't hear different voices of opinion and perspective and validation
yeah.
or lack of validation. We just don't see that anymore. And maybe because it's the intestinal fortitude of people who find that they no longer have support within a particular newspaper. You know, you
yeah.
get marginalized, but then you also need a job. So you can do a great job as long as the demeanor of the power that be is aligned with what you're thinking. Otherwise, really, you need to pick up and go. But
yeah.
a lot of people don't have that capacity. Financially,
no,
they can't do it.
We start websites.
Yeah, that's true as well.
Right. And
that's what
in
I
fact,
did.
The Baltimore Sun now has a rival, the Baltimore Banner, which is trying to report better news than the Baltimore Sun will do eventually. But The problem is it takes an awful lot of money to run a print operation. You have to have financial backing. And that's just the way it is. But
yeah, absolutely.
There is another problem, though, is the vast number of political websites that basically print propaganda about the Biden administration, which everybody believes.
Yeah.
I don't understand why the White House is not getting the message out as strongly and as powerfully as it can. They have the means to do so, but they seem reluctant to get the news out there. So they're not celebrating. So media may not be celebrating what the Biden administration is doing, but the Biden administration must celebrate what it's accomplished. And that's a failure of the administration. Because he deserves better, I think.
Absolutely. Off the top of my head, I just thought of it. I thought of a great Democratic slogan that should be saturating the airwaves out there in Trump country. And that slogan is, America's already back. Why send it back?
Yeah. Why send it back? Well, yeah. John, unfortunately, I didn't even realize it. We're over our time slot. And I see Michael Edelman's already on the line. So I want to thank you for a scintillating half hour, as always. All the best to you. And regards to Brenda Starr.
Good luck to Mr. Edelman. And keep it up, Mike.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, John. All the best to you. Goodbye.
So long.
All right. Well, there we are with, and let's bring in Michael Edelman, who's on the line already. Good morning, Michael. How are you, sir?
Hey, Hezzy, how have you been?
Thank God. Okay. You know, the doctors are keeping me here. So, and thank goodness, mentally, there's still clarity in my mind, considering all the medication I'm
taking. Well, you're ahead of me then.
Well, you know, sometimes it wanes. It vacillates between being seemingly clear with alacrity and other times not. I think the thing that really scared the hell out of me, considering all my medication and the different medical issues, I was afraid that I would lose my vocabulary and my capacity to express thought.
Gotcha.
That scared the bejesus out of me. Unbelievable. Well, there's a lot of stuff going on. What's the likelihood of getting a woman, you know, like Nikki Haley, to move forward? Can she eclipse the likes of Donald Trump? Or is
never
she
happens.
Just,
look, no, it's not going to happen, has he? She's going to lose New Hampshire. She's not even going to win South Carolina, which is her state. Donald Trump has a death hold on 40% of the Republican Party, and they come out and vote in primaries.
Yeah, exactly.
So there's no way for her, in my judgment, to overcome him.
Trump has become a cult figure.
Yes, that's right.
It's
unbelievable. That's why he needs to run again and lose. That's what has to happen. The only way to get him out of our system, the only way to preserve this democracy, is to obliterate in an election Donald Trump and his cult followers. And they're not going to do violence because the army's on the side of the elected president. So if Biden beats them again and this group of nuts wants to fight, good. We'll call out the Marines and the Army. You're all set.
So this is where you think we're going to be moving forward? That cult quality of Trump, what I find unconscionable, but maybe he's got some good ideas, maybe he doesn't. That's up to individuals to decide. But what I find what undermines his integrity with me is that he seems to have a propensity to undermine and denigrate people. He looks for something that he thinks he can make fun of. And he doesn't show respect for other people as if he's important. And I don't understand how that could become part of the environment that people accept, even though they may like him. And I'm not quite sure what they like about him. Is it his
bravado for the most
against
part,
the system?
Yeah. These are people that believe they've been left behind by technology and jobs. They've lost jobs. They don't have the skills to get jobs in the new technology world. And so there they are, paycheck to paycheck, maybe two jobs, sometimes three jobs.
Yes.
They're in the middle of – so they're looking for somebody who is a strong man. This is similar to Orban in Hungary. Trump says he likes all these guys. They're very strong. President Xi, President, Kim, everybody is strong, and he is a disciple of being strong and has promised, if he is elected, to obliterate the Independent Justice Department and have them work directly for him to punish his enemies. He's promised that. And that's what his cult followers like to hear. They want revenge. They want to get back at least on the coasts who they perceive are too liberal on a lot of issues, including immigration. They feel their whiteness is being lost. Some of them are Christian nationalists who want the government to be run in a Christian way, by people who are Christians and who believe in the blood and soil. So you saw that in Charlottesville. And that's what's happening. And so the rest of us need to go vote in a general election. It's up to six states. So my vote really doesn't count. Your vote will not count in New York. The only votes that are going to count are in the six swing states that will determine the outcome in the Electoral College of the election, including Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Georgia, Arizona, Colorado. Those are the states that they have to win.
Mm-hmm. What about the media? The media has fallen down in the process. They're not insightful. Not that they're inciting riot or anything. It's just that they don't see into issues, and they're not deciphering what people need to know. Are they scared as well in the process? Have they been marginalized too? Because I don't see independent thinking in the press very much now.
Well, you do in some quarters. I mean, I don't know what press you watch. I don't know what you watch.
I don't watch Fox News, but I read the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal, those every day. And
do you watch Joe Scarborough at 6 in the morning?
No.
Morning Joe? Are you up that
early?
No,
I haven't done that. I should be. I didn't even think about it, but that's a good point. I really should listen.
That show is on for 4 hours. He's a former conservative congressman from the Panhandle in Florida. He teamed up with the daughter of Brzezinski, who was the Secretary of State under Jimmy Carter, and they have a great show. They have wonderful guests, and Scarborough is right on the nose, right on the nose when it comes to dealing with Donald Trump. Now, you got to watch that to understand just exactly what's going on. The other thing is if you have CNN, they report the news.
Yes.
MSNBC is more of an opinion station, like Fox is, but CNN is straight news. So
yeah, I'll have
Jake
to do
Tapper,
that. I'll have to change my viewing habits.
Mm-hmm.
Just doesn't seem to be enough time. But then I've got to focus differently.
Mm-hmm.
So where do you think we're going as a nation? Are we still muddled? Does Nikki Haley have a chance in hell, or is she just a waste of time?
No, she doesn't have a chance. They're voting tomorrow in New Hampshire, and Donald Trump will overwhelmingly win New Hampshire. Now, he may not win it like he won Iowa with 50%, but he'll win by 30%, right? Mm-hmm. It certainly won't be enough to say that there's a that he's not going to be the nominee. And after he wins tomorrow, it's going to be all over. Except he's going to be appearing in court in New York today. All right, so we're going to see how much money he's going to owe for going after this E. Jean Carroll and calling her, you know, saying she's a liar when in fact she wasn't lying. And in court, she basically proved that she was raped by Donald Trump in a department store some 30 years ago.
Right.
And so the other issue is that they polled on is all of these people that are supporting Donald Trump. They asked them if he is ultimately convicted of a felony, will you still support him? Okay, 30% said they would not. So that's the key to beating him. Any of these trials that go forward with Jack Smith as the prosecutor or Fani Willis, if they actually occur in the first part of the year so people can see the evidence, as they did in a lot of other high-profile cases where, you know, the reporters are right outside the court and they're telling you what happens minute by minute because they don't allow cameras in federal court, right?
Yes.
But you get a sense of what's going on from the reporters that are sitting in the gallery.
Exactly.
And when that happens, and when he's convicted, which he will be, 30% of his support will disappear. And when that happens, there's no way for him to win a general election, which is why I say he needs to be the nominee, because he needs to be beaten once and for all and sent packing. And he can take his BS and his strong men and his lies with him.
Yeah.
Because that's all he knows how to do.
That's all he knows how to do. And what about Biden's administration? Why aren't they putting out more news? Because he's accomplishing a lot of things. What's going on there?
Well, first of all, you have an entire network, Fox News, that doesn't report.
Yes.
Okay? All they do is they are a fan club. They are a fan club. So those people that watch Fox are getting a skewed view.
Yes.
Okay? Of reality. And they're getting told what they want to hear. It's confirmation bias. So they don't believe for a single second that all of this is real. They believe it's a witch hunt and made up and everything that Trump says, blah, blah, blah. That's a huge chunk of the audience that's watching.
How did all this happen? How is it that somehow media got commandeered? Is it all for monetary gain? Is that how we got the different outlets out there? Because there used to be balanced reporting. It doesn't seem to be balanced anymore. Now it seems to be perspective.
It started to get unbalanced with Rush Limbaugh.
Yes, it did.
Whose audience during the day was
through the roof.
Than the networks at night. And he kept pushing this right-wing nonsense, all right, constantly. And he developed the following. And then Fox News did the same thing so that their opinion hosts, right now Tucker Carlson is gone, but the other opinion hosts, Sean Hannity, Laura Ingraham, Jeanine Pirro, Jesse Waters, were doing the exact same thing. And so you had this continuum of misinformation being handed to these people who ate it up because they don't want to face the truth, which is that the nation is changing color. We're going from white to light brown. And it's going to happen over 20 or 30 years, and there's nothing these people can do to stop it.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so unfortunately... unfortunately, this network and its owner, Rupert Murdoch, chose poorly because by claiming that the election was stolen and that Smartmatic and Dominion were responsible, they incurred a lawsuit, which so far has cost them $1 billion and will cost them another $1 billion when Smartmatic case comes. So Rupert wasn't so smart in doing what he was doing because he created a false narrative and that some people followed. But you know what? The courts and the judicial system are doing their job of punishing the people that were guilty in the January 6th attempt to interfere. It's not so much, Hezzy, the invasion of the building. It's not so much that, okay, even though that happened. What was extremely serious about January 6th is that it was an attempted coup by a president who lost an election, an attempt to stay in power by creating havoc when the vice president's job was to count the votes, the electoral votes that were certified. What Trump was trying to do, as you will learn when the evidence is presented, in combination with members of the United States Congress, what he was trying to do was stop the counting.
Yeah.
To create some doubt about whether Biden won the election. Fortunately, Mike Pence didn't go for it and did exactly what he was supposed to do, which is count the votes that are in the box that you are given. And that was the end of the coup, but it was an attempted coup. So the people that were in, to be distinguished by these nuts that were going, you know, that were assaulting the Capitol, which was, you know, a disgrace, okay, those were egged on by Donald Trump. But the important part of January 6th was the attempt to overthrow the election.
Yeah, that's the bottom line. I never thought that would ever happen of all places in America.
No, nobody thought it would happen. But the guy, well, you know, people elected a guy with a big mouth who wants to be a dictator. That's what he wants.
Yeah.
And that's what he'll do if he's elected again. He'll call out the National Guard. He'll declare martial law. He'll do a lot of things that America has never seen.
He's got a lot of support. You know, there are people who support him. Is it conceivable that he could be reelected, or can Biden, you know, clout, you know, eclipse Donald Trump?
Yeah.
Because it seems like it's really going to be a tough choice. It's going to be a tough election. Or do you think that Biden's got what it takes?
I told you, the election is in 6 days.
Yeah. Very frightening. I never thought that we would be here. You know, America was the most stable country in the world, but we're in disarray.
If he's elected, that will change.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't even imagine what it would be like, you know, to hear a guy, the president of the United States, demeaning people, ostracizing different sects of society. It's unbelievable. I just never thought we'd ever get here. Amazing.
No, we are here.
So, yeah, exactly. We are here. And do you think it was his attitude that really changed the equation, didn't it? It was his demeanor, his cult figure-like attitude, and I guess the fact that people thought he had a lot of money, and money was like his meal ticket, and somehow that was the way he said, "Hey, I'm rich, and I could say whatever I want, and this, I'm saying what you want to say," and so on and so forth. And people wanted to emulate him. This is truly amazing, that this happened. It's just like Hitler-esque somehow or another.
Well, it's exactly what it is. I wouldn't go as far as Hitler, although he had a book of Hitler's speeches on his night table. Yes. When he
right.
when he was married to Ivana. So he, yes. he knows the vermin word and blood and soil
right.
and poisoning the blood, blah blah blah. But he's more,
mm-hmm.
he's much more like Mussolini. I think he's much more like Mussolini.
Uh huh. Yeah, I think you're right. I never thought of it that way, but you're right. Unbelievable. So where do we go from here? Is this going to the next election? Will be a major major challenge. Will it divide the nation?
It's already
divided, but will it
the nation's
maintain
already
that
divided.
Division?
We
yeah. So, can there be some influence to make a change, make it more civil, or are we just now on different sides of the aisle? Is that where we are today? What can change the demeanor, or is there anything that can change the demeanor? Is it conceivable that at the end of the day, it looks like we may have lost Michael. So hopefully he'll call back and we'll be able to go from there for some reason. One second. I don't know what happened at my end. One second here. For some reason. Yeah, somehow we lost him on the line. He'll probably call back very shortly, so we'll see where that goes. Well, my goodness, there's so much happening, and it's very frightening because the civility... Oh, there's Michael Edelman. Somehow we lost him.
Yeah, sorry, the call was dropped on my side.
Yeah, it doesn't matter why, but thank you for calling back. So...
Yeah.
Are we at a crossroads right now because of what Trump is saying, Biden's campaign?
Yeah.
When is this going to ratchet up to a point where we're going to see a solid challenge where Biden and Trump will be meeting again? And do you think it will be influenced by the court cases that are coming out against Trump? Will that make
Absolutely.
A big difference for people? It will.
Yes,
huh?
It will. That's what will make a difference. Conviction of the felony will make a difference.
Uh-huh.
To 30% of his support, but that's all you need.
Right. Yeah, but that's all you need, exactly.
That's all you need
yet,
to break away.
Yes.
What?
Well, I was just thinking
what?
That, and yet a lot of the media was reporting that that Trump is unstoppable no matter what, and that people were not going to be paying attention to the convictions should they come about.
Well, they may not be paying attention now, okay? But on
but
Super Tuesday,
later
they're
on.
Going to be paying attention. Yeah, we're in an election
yeah.
year. They're going to pay attention eventually.
Exactly.
Not now.
Yeah. Uh-huh. All right, so we'll see where this goes.
Exactly.
Can we get back to a point where politically – there's a greater amount of civility and truth
I
that comes
it.
Out.
I doubt
you
it.
I doubt it.
Yeah.
So
because
everyone's
the people
everyone's
that,
decided.
The pe-
Go ahead.
The people that are members of his cult are just
uh-huh.
as vulgar as he is, and that's the key.
Yeah.
They want to see somebody
mm-hmm.
who's vulgar. They want to see somebody who isn't in the lines that we usually call civil, and who breaks
mm-hmm.
away, and who name calls and shames people, you know, with their names, like calling Nikki Haley Namorita, which is her Indian
yeah.
given name.
Yeah.
That's what he does. And that's what these people love. They love a person like that. They love a person like Rush Limbaugh. These people... mostly non-college educated, mostly not able to critically think, and finally they are subject to disinformation and believing it because they listen to one source, and that is Fox News, and their confirmation bias is what Fox News does, and so they never hear the whole story and the whole facts, and they don't think for themselves. They just
so that's
like
really
Donald
not going to change, is it? because Fox News is making a fortune of money catering to this sort of listener viewer. There is no discourse. There's just opinion. And I guess some people have lost sight of what the difference is between reporting and opinion. So has a lot of media dropped the ball? Or is it that gravitate to certain media?
They've dropped the ball. It's not about dropping the ball. A lot of the media reports the facts is that this subset of listeners is only going to listen to Fox News.
Which is opinion. Yeah. So can we go beyond this point, or the only way to go beyond this point is to see the, the diminution of a Donald Trump in the next election process? Is that the only
That's what we have to watch.
Get rid of him, excise him. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow. Unbelievable. This is going to be a tough election then, my goodness.
Of course
tougher
it is.
Than one I think will be expected.
Yeah. Most important. This will be the most important election of your lifetime because democracy will be on the table. If he's elected, there will be no democracy.
Yeah.
In the United States.
Yeah. That's frightening. It really is frightening. I never would have thought that we would have come to this point.
Well,
it seems more
here we
and
are.
More evident. Yeah, here we are. Wow. You know, I can't even imagine living in this country with Donald Trump being
well,
in power.
Well, many people are going to leave. Plenty of people are going to leave. Including us.
Including me.
Yeah.
Portugal's
nice.
Not the place to
Spain
be.
Is nice. Italy is nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're all nice.
Yeah, there are a lot of good places to go to.
Yep.
For goodness sakes. Are other nations going through the same process that you're aware of? I mean, it doesn't seem like this is happening in Great Britain.
Well, no, it's not happening. They have a different system than we have.
Yes.
We have an electoral college, which is dysfunctional. In England, whoever gets the most votes wins, gets to pick the prime minister, correct?
Yes,
we don't
exactly.
have that system.
Yes.
Our system, the last seven of eight presidential elections, Republicans lost the popular vote. And they lost the popular vote to Joe Biden by 7 million votes.
Yeah.
But still, Trump won the election in 2016 and lost the popular vote. When you have a situation like we have that was designed by the framers, which becomes unworkable eventually because of the population disparities between the states that have, you know, five people in the sheep, and they get two electoral college votes. And, you know, a state like New York, which has got 28 million people, which gets the same votes. So that's the problem. Mm.
Well, it's something to think about. I don't know if things are going to change in a week's time, but I guess we're on a road and a path that doesn't look very promising at the moment. What can change the equation at the moment? The court cases against Trump, that might change the demeanor of the nation. Is Biden strong enough
that's what I'm
to get the message
on.
Out?
That's what I'm betting on. That's what I'm betting on.
All right. Well, I guess I'm going to have to put my money where your mouth is because I don't have the strength to figure that out on my own.
There you go.
Well, as always, thank you so much for your input, Michael Edelman. What a pleasure.
You're welcome.
All the best
I'll
to you.
I'll speak to you next week.
Thank you.
Yep.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye. There we have it. None other than Michael Edelman. He's a national and international political analyst and pundit. Brilliant, brilliant mind. Unbelievable repertoire of accomplishment in politics, in law. Amazing. It's just truly, truly mind-boggling. Well, let's look at a couple of things before we end the day. So bear with me a second here. I wanted to check on some important news. Bear with me a moment here. One second. One moment. This is very interesting. On the international stage, Germany's far-right political party called Alternative für Deutschland, the German alternative, could face legal challenges. Seems that Germany is deliberating over what legal steps can be taken to combat the right-wing populist Alternative for Germany. Anti-constitutional parties can have their state funding suspended or be banned. Well, Germany in January of 2024, the Alternative for Germany, AfD, which the Federal Office for the Protection of the Constitution has partially classified as right-wing extremist, is enjoying record highs in opinion polls. Bear with me a second here. Okay. All right, just one second. Where are we here? One second, I'm going to make sure that we're on. One second, I'm not quite sure if we're on or not. No, we are on, so that's good. Well, the German Bundestag is also debating how to deal with the Alternative for Germany. A motion has been submitted by the three governing parliamentary factions, the center-left Social Democrats, the SPD, the Greens, and the neoliberal Free Democrats, the FDP. So the topic is resilient democracy in a diverse country, a clear stand against the enemies of democracy and their plans of forced displacement. And this is prompted by a media report about a meeting of right-wing extremists in which Alternative for Germany officials, as well as members of the center-right Christian Democratic Union, CDU, took part. So the gathering is said to have been about plans for the so-called immigration the so-called remigration, which means the expulsion of millions of people who have immigrated to Germany. Well, German Chancellor Olaf Scholz slammed fanatics about details after details emerged about the meeting of far-right Alternative for Germany politicians and neo-Nazis. The participants are said to have discussed plans to remigrate millions of people with foreign roots, including citizens. And in the parliamentary debate, Bernd Baumann, parliamentary secretary of the Alternative for Germany, told lawmakers that the meeting was no more than a small private debate club, but not a, quote, secret meeting dangerous to the public. Well, Federal Interior Minister Nancy Faeser of the SPD responded, quote, "We are seeing an active effort to shift borders and to spread contempt for democracy and misanthropy into the heart of society." So Nancy Faeser said she could also imagine banning the party, but only as a last resort. So how can a party be banned? Well, the last time there was an attempt to ban a party concluded and failed back in 2017 against the nationalist and racist National Democratic Party of Germany, the NPD, which has since renamed itself Heimat, or Homeland. The Constitutional Court found at the time that the splinter party was so insignificant that it posed no threat to democracy and therefore did not ban it. Well, unlike the former NPD and the Alternative für Deutschland, AfD has been enjoying a wave of popularity. However, it has only been confirmed as right-wing extremist, quote-unquote, in three of Germany's 16 states. Well, the Federal Constitutional Court has set high hurdles for banning parties. In an interview with Deutsche Welle, Christian Pestalozza, an expert on constitutional law in Berlin, explained that one prerequisite was that there must already be a certain probability that the party in question will at some point have enough weight to achieve its goals, withholding funds from the Alternative for Germany. Well, it is easier, however, to exclude an anti-constitutional party from state funding in Germany. Parties are financed by membership fees, donations, and tax money. And the more votes a party receives in elections, the more it is entitled to receive from state coffers. For the Alternative for Germany,
This currently amounts to over 10 million euros at $10.8 million. So if parliamentary elections were held this week, how would people vote? According to Pestalozza, it would be easier to exclude a party from this kind of funding because of its allegedly unconstitutional goals would be enough without having to prove that they have the potential to implement them. End quote. So even if the alternative for Germany, the Alternative für Deutschland political program sounded relatively harmless, showing that the reality is quite different could be enough, says Pestalozza. But whether these conditions have already been met is a matter of speculation. This is something that authorities at the Federal Office for the Protection of the Constitution, Germany's domestic intelligence agency, which has been monitoring the party and some of its state affiliates, know better, he says. As a so-called observation case, the alternative for Germany must be subject to surveillance in Thuringia, Saxony, and Saxony-Anhalt using secret methods such as phone tapping. The German constitutional law expert believes that excluding the party from state funding, at least in these federal states, is possible. To do so, the government or parliament would have to submit the relevant motions. The federal constitutional court could then still come to a completely different conclusion than the intelligence agency. However, Pestalozza stresses that this is unlikely. So where do German political parties get their money? Well, revoking individual basic rights, another way to combat perceived enemies of the Constitution, would be to revoke basic rights from individuals. And this would mean that they would no longer be allowed to run for public office. For example, an online petition has been launched recently aiming to prevent the Thuringian Alternative for Germany right-winger Björn Höcke from being able to become state premier in the state elections in September 2024. His party is currently polling well over 30%. However, constitutional law expert Azim Semizoglu of the University of Leipzig doubts that Höcke's basic rights can be revoked. Similar efforts have never been successful, he says, and the hurdles for such proceedings are also quite high. However, he does not consider such an attempt to be completely futile, as it takes less effort to investigate a single person for allegedly being anti-constitutional than it does to investigate the entire party. So debates on banning the Alternative for Germany and other possible sanctions against the party or individuals notwithstanding, Semizoglu believes that democracy in Germany is strong enough to defend itself against its enemies. Quote, it's an encouraging moment to see so many people taking to the streets against racism, he said. So very, 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 very fascinating. So we'll see how all this goes. Truly, truly amazing. All right. Check some other things. This is really quite interesting. In India, Modi has inaugurated a controversial Ayodhya temple. India's Prime Minister Narendra Modi has inaugurated a temple dedicated to the Hindu god Lord Ram on the site of a mosque in Ayodhya. His Hindu nationalist BJP party has been hyping up the event election ahead of the elections. Well, India's Prime Minister Narendra Modi kicked off a consecration ceremony on Monday for the Ram temple and unveiled a black statue of the Hindu god in the city of Ayodhya, which is believed to be Ram's birthplace. Modi led the opening ceremony dressed in a traditional kurta tunic as Hindu priests chanted hymns inside the temple's inner sanctum. Modi's Hindu nationalist Bharatiya Janata Party, the BJP, has set up lavish celebrations across much of the country marking the inauguration. Well, the temple is being built on land where a mosque had stood for centuries before, being torn down by Hindu nationalists in 1992, sparking violent protests. The Prime Minister has argued that the event is a bid for reconciliation. quote, "The Lord has made me an instrument to represent all the people of India," Modi said earlier in January. In a speech after the ceremony, Modi said that the temple opening marks, quote, "marks the dawn of a new era." Well, the construction of the Grand Ram Temple cost around 200 million euros. That's about $270 million. The temple's trust said that the construction was funded mostly by private donations. The opening is significant for India and for the BJP as it's emblematic of the increasing influence of Hindu nationalist politics under Modi's government. Ahead of the opening of the temple, thousands of Hindu devotees danced in packed streets on Sunday in Ayodhya as blaring loudspeakers played hymns and religious songs. Millions of Indians watched the ceremony on television, with news channels running nonstop coverage of the event. Some 80 chartered flights have landed at the new international airport in Ayodhya for the partial opening of the temple. The ceremony was viewed by nearly 7,500 people, including many prominent politicians, sports and Bollywood celebrities, on a giant screen installed outside the temple as flower petals were showered by a military helicopter. Quote, "It is a matter of great privilege to be part of the divine program," Modi wrote on X as he participated in the ceremony. The temple, which is still under construction, will be open to the public after the ceremony is over. Authorities estimated that some 100,000 devotees will visit the Ram Temple daily. Well, there is controversy surrounding the Ram Temple. The 50-meter high, that's about 150 feet high temple, has been built on the land where a mosque stood for centuries before it was demolished in 1992 by Hindu groups. Hindus, meanwhile, claim that the Babri Mosque was, in turn, built over Lord Ram's birthplace by a 16th century Muslim emperor. A team from the Archaeological Survey of India, the ASI, excavated the site in 2019 and reported evidence of a temple having existed there prior to the mosque. The demolition of the Babri Mosque triggered communal riots that claimed more than 2,000 lives, most of them Muslims. A protracted legal battle over the ownership of the land followed the mosque's demolition. It was resolved in 2019 when the Supreme Court gave the disputed land to the Hindus. Muslims were given a plot outside the city to build a mosque. So, well, we're going to have to see where all this goes. A lot of controversy to the inauguration. So let's hope for the best. Now let's just see one second here. One moment here. Okay, this is a major, major issue with regard to the Red Sea crisis. Can European Union warships deter Houthi rebels? In response to escalating Houthi attacks, the European Union considers deploying warships to safeguard the Red Sea. But the stakes of intervention are high, analysts advise, and military action alone won't work. It seems that with missiles flying over the Red Sea between the U.S., backed by the United Kingdom, and Yemen's Houthi rebels, the European Union is forming its own response to a new crisis well beyond Israeli and Palestinian borders, but bound up with the conflict in Gaza. The European Union is teeing up a new maritime mission to protect ships and, with them, the bloc's trade interests in a strategically vital region. The risk of dangerous escalation in deterring the Houthis is high, analysts warn, and the European Union must tread carefully. So why is the European Union considering a Red Sea mission? Well, for several weeks, the Houthis, who control swaths of northern and western Yemen, have been attacking merchant ships in the Red Sea, one of the world's busiest shipping bottlenecks, linking the Arabian Sea with the Mediterranean via the Suez Canal. The Iran-allied terror group began its attacks in the wake of Israel's military offensive in Gaza, itself a response to terror outfit Hamas's October 7 attacks in southern Israel, while the Houthis say that their attacks are a show of solidarity with Palestinians under Israeli bombardment and that they are targeting ships with direct or indirect links to Israel. Well, the European Union, along with other world powers, has slammed the targeting of commercial ships as illegal. So 40% of European trade with Asia and the Middle East passes through these waters, and many ships have had to reroute all the way around southern Africa, causing significant and costly delays. Well, the new European Union mission, which has not yet been agreed upon and will likely take weeks to finalize, would be separate from Washington's Operation Prosperity Guardian. The operation is being carried out by a roughly 20-country coalition. The U.S.-led mission was launched in December, dividing opinion in the European Union. The Netherlands, Greece, and Denmark joined up, for instance, while France, Italy, and Spain declined. So what does the European Union have up its sleeve? Well, various responses to the situation have been proposed over the past few weeks. But the basic idea is to send warships to patrol the Regional Action Service, the bloc's foreign diplomatic service, proposed sending at least three ships, according to multiple media outlets citing a leaked internal European Union document. Well, speaking on condition of anonymity after initial discussions, a diplomatic source advised the preferred option seemed to be reapportioning an existing French-led operation, Aguinaud, which monitored the nearby Strait of Hormuz. Eight European Union countries are already involved in that operation as part of a broader mission named IMASH-OH, so the European Maritime Awareness in the Strait of Hormuz, which, quote, intends to diffuse tensions and to contribute to a safe navigational environment, end quote, according to the mission's website. Well, on Wednesday, Italian Foreign Minister Antonio Tajani appeared to confirm the plan. The easiest solution was to expand Aguinaud into the Red Sea, he said. I believe that even the European Union's External Action Service is quite favorable to this hypothesis, Tajani said in comments reported by news agency Reuters. On Wednesday, Dutch Defense Minister Kaisa Ollongren told local media that her country could potentially make a frigate available for the European Union mission. Quote, we are still looking into it, but we will also discuss it with the lower house of parliament, end quote, she told the broadcaster DNR. The European Union aims to have the mission established by February 19 and operational soon thereafter. Reuters reported, citing unnamed diplomatic sources. For now, the next step is a European Union foreign ministers meeting on Monday. That's today. Why is European Union intervention in the Red Sea so divisive? Well, the European Union response had gotten off to a slow start. Several states, particularly Spain, have ducked U.S. overtures for joint intervention in recent weeks. Many European Union member states fear a dangerous escalation in the region already on a razor's edge. U.S. and British strikes against Houthi sites last Friday, for instance, garnered a tepid European Union response. The U.S. said it only received practical, hands-on assistance from the shipping-dependent Dutch, Germany, and Denmark, reportedly offering their backing in a written statement. Spain, which is governed by a left-wing coalition, has made it clear it won't participate in the European Union's Red Sea mission, though European Union military missions need unanimous approval. Member states can abstain from taking part in operations. Well, every country has to give explanation for its actions. Spain will always be committed to peace and dialogue, Spanish Defense Minister Margarita Robles told reporters in Madrid last week, according to news agency Agence France-Presse, AFP. Well, U.S. and British strikes and Houthi retaliation have further complicated the situation of the European Union. As Nathalie Tocci, director of Italy's Institute for the International Affairs, IAI, explained, and sending ships now has even more escalatory potential, and those ships will also need the capacity to respond to attacks, she said. These would be warships with the intent of shooting, not necessarily attacking, on Yemeni soil, but certainly shooting down anything that comes, Torchu pointed out. Compared to the present Agenor monitoring mission, this would be a, quote, completely different ballgame, end quote. So what are the risks? For the European Union, the risks are both tactical and reputational, according to Tochi. First of all, there is the risk that a European Union ship gets attacked and the situation escalates. Then there is the risk that the mission has no meaningful impact and makes the European Union look weak. Quote, let's put this in perspective. The Saudis have been bombing the hell out of Yemen for 10 years, Tochi said. Saudi Arabia has led a coalition fighting the Houthis since 2015, backing the internationally recognized Yemeni government in a years-long civil war. Quote, did they actually succeed in weakening the Houthis' military capacities? No, they didn't, she said. So, what makes us think some sort of maritime operation, which presumably would have a defensive rather than offensive, would actually deter in any shape or form, she asked. Turkey fears that the European Union is acting out of an urge to do something, quote unquote, rather than asking itself exactly what it can achieve. However, for Camille Lund, an analyst from the European Council on Foreign Relations, the ECFR, it is crucial for the European Union to find, quote, an answer to the maritime security threats that we're seeing because it's directly targeting their economic security and interests. Lund had told Deutsche Welle that this was especially true when the bloc failed to unanimously fall in line with the United States. Despite its important trade interests, she said that the European Union has been a non-player since the Houthis started making their attacks. Well, Gaza is the elephant in the room. Both Tochi and Lund agree that the root cause of the current Red Sea crisis is to be found in Gaza. Unfortunately, the two analysts advise that the European Union's mixed response to that conflict, too, has also undermined its credibility on the world stage, particularly in regions that are strongly sympathetic or sympathize with the Palestinians. Looking to the future, Ron said there is a real, quote, need to address the instability in Yemen and the broader instability in the entire Red Sea, end quote. This will require a diplomatic response, she said, more than just a military response of what's happening right now. So, unbelievable, literally unbelievable. Well, let's just quickly look to see what else we can share with you today. One second. One more moment here. All right, I want to check this out. Bear with me a second. Okay, let's look at some of the latest news that's coming out of Gaza. Heavy bombardment in Khan Yunis as the Gaza death toll topped 25,000. Gaza's Hamas-run health ministry on Sunday said that a total of 25,105 Palestinians have been killed there since October 7. Fighting raged across the strip with reports of especially heavy gunfire, airstrikes, and tank shelling focused on Khan Yunis, Gaza's main southern city, and Israeli bombardment of Gaza City and other areas in the north. And so that's one of the big issues there. Bear with me a moment. One second here. All right, one second. Latest news, evidently Iran's Revolutionary Guard said that five of its members were killed by an Israeli strike in Damascus on Saturday. with the United Kingdom-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, saying that the missile targeted an area where guard members and pro-Iran Palestinian factions were meeting and giving a death toll of at least 10 people. And so that was the situation reported there. Bear with me a moment here. One second. Just want to check anything else happening in the Middle East there. One moment here. Seems that a French warship has been turned into a field hospital and is treating injured Gazans off the Egyptian coast. That's something new. One second. Okay. Now let me just check this with you. I feel like there's some sort of discord over the two-state solution, which has opened up a rift between the United States and Israel. It seems that U.S. President Biden and Israel's Benjamin Netanyahu held their first phone call in nearly a month on Friday, following the Israeli Prime Minister's rejection of a Washington-backed call for Palestinian sovereignty, with Biden and Netanyahu appearing to be at odds on the issue of a two-state solution to follow the war in Gaza. So that's the situation. It seems that President Joe Biden spoke with the Israeli Prime Minister on Friday, a day after the Israeli Prime Minister reiterated his opposition to the idea of a Palestinian statehood and a post-war future for Palestinians in Gaza and the West Bank backed by the U.S. Netanyahu said on Thursday that it must have security control over all the territory west of the Jordan River, saying he has made this clear to Israel's American friends, quote-unquote. This is a necessary condition, and it conflicts with the idea of Palestinian sovereignty, Netanyahu said in a televised news conference. Seeking a more permanent solution to the decades-long Israeli-Palestinian conflict that forms the backdrop of the current war between Israel and Hamas, the United States has pushed Israel forward steps toward the establishment of a Palestinian state. While U.S. authorities have called for a reformed Palestinian Authority, which currently governs semi-autonomous zones in the Israeli-occupied West Bank, to govern Gaza after the war. While the Gaza Strip is currently ruled by Hamas, which ousted the Fatah government of Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas in 2007 after a landslide victory in parliamentary elections. Well, despite the Israeli premier's open resistance, Biden said on Friday that their phone call Netanyahu might eventually agree to some form of Palestinian statehood, such as one without armed forces. Well, the president still believes in the promise and the possibility of a two-state solution for both Israelis and Palestinians. U.S. National Security Council spokesperson John Kirby told reporters in a briefing after the call, adding that Biden, quote, made clear his strong conviction that a two-state solution is still the right path ahead, and we're going to continue to make that the case, end quote. Well, the United States does have some leverage over its main Middle East ally, given that Israel has been the main beneficiary of U.S. foreign aid since World War II, receiving more than $260 billion in military and economic aid, and whether Netanyahu said last week that a prime minister in Israel should be able to say no, even to our best friends, can be convinced, remains to be seen, however. Well, the U.S.-Israeli bilateral relationship is said to be special, quote-unquote, because it is based on shared values. However, relations between America and Israel have never been idyllic. It is an ardent relationship between two friends and allies, but one that has known periods of tension. In fact, these tensions go back a long way. We could easily see this in the presidencies of Dwight D. Eisenhower, Lyndon B. Johnson, and Jimmy Carter, or more recently, Barack Obama. Even Donald Trump, described by Netanyahu as, quote, Israel's best friend, end quote, did not hesitate last October to call Israeli Defense Minister Yoav Gallant a jerk, quote, unquote, or to criticize the Israeli Prime Minister in the wake of Hamas's October 7 massacres. Well, the establishment of a Palestinian state is backed by the United States and Saudi Arabia, and even by some of the Israeli ruling class. So can Netanyahu continue to resist it? In the short term, yes. Benjamin Netanyahu will do absolutely anything to stay in power, and his strategy is very clearly to wage war for as long as possible because he knows he is popular and facing multiple charges for corruption, bribery, and fraud. He is therefore trying to buy time, hoping to win back public support by assuming the role of warlord. Well, Netanyahu is a shrewd and calculating politician, but he is weakened by his Faustian alliance with the far right, which opposes any prospect of a two-state solution to the conflict. However, he is old and on borrowed time and will sooner or later have to step down. Beyond the national unity discourse fostered by the war and the trauma of October 7, the Israeli population has largely withdrawn its support for him. Polls show his popularity plummeting, even among moderate right-wing voters. But the Gulf states' offers to normalize relations with Israel in return for substantial progress toward the establishment of a Palestinian state will outlast Benjamin Netanyahu. Saudi Arabia on Tuesday said it would recognize Israel if a Palestinian state is established. This is even more so as the leader of the petrostates are young and will probably remain in charge for decades to come. Finally, it should be noted that the Israeli political configuration will change profoundly after Netanyahu's departure. The center, embodied by Benny Gantz, a center-left minister of parliament who has repeatedly challenged Netanyahu for the premiership, is likely to take over with the right and far right serving in the op. By refusing Biden's proposals, is Netanyahu betting on Trump winning the 2024 election? Absolutely, but it's a risky bet. After all, relations between Benjamin Netanyahu and Donald Trump, whose temperament is extremely volatile, are now very cool. The former U.S. president feels that Netanyahu betrayed him by recognizing Biden's electoral victory in November of 2020. Next, let's remember that the $14.5 billion in additional emergency promised to Israel by Joe Biden has still not been endorsed by the Senate because the Republicans are opposed to it for purely political reasons, which has nothing to do with Israel-Palestine conflict, but everything to do with the polarization of U.S. politics. Any Democratic proposal is a pretext for systematic Republican obstruction, even if it means putting their immediate political interest ahead of the United States' strategic alliance with Israel. Conversely, if Trump comes to power, the Democrats are likely to adopt an identical strategy of systematic obstruction. So could Washington's $3 billion in annual military aid to Israel be at stake? There is a pro-Israel tradition that goes beyond the White House to the Pentagon, where most U.S. strategists believe that the alliance with Israel is first and foremost in the United States' interest. But even if U.S. aid is not called into question, the conditions under which it is granted are likely to become more complicated as we are witnessing a politicization of American military support for the Hebrew state, an issue which up until now had avoided any real debate in the United States. Well, the Republicans are turning towards isolationism and the Democrats toward progressivism. In the medium term, changes in the U.S. political game will lead Israel to make more concessions if it intends to maintain a high level of U.S. diplomatic and military support. Israelis are more dependent than ever on military aid due to their recent focus on high-tech weapons, while urban fighting in Gaza demands artillery, munitions of all kinds, including low-tech ones, such as tank shells, which are not made in Israel. And this gives the United States leverage over Israel's conduct of the war. The setting up of humanitarian corridors in Gaza, the increase in humanitarian aid, and the scaling back of Israel's offensive on the Palestinian enclave were all achieved under pressure from the U.S. administration, contrary to what Netanyahu would have his people believe. So these are some of the major concerns. Bear with me a moment here. One second here. Evidently, this is interesting news. The National Aeronautics and Space Administration, NASA, regained contact with a mini helicopter on Mars. So NASA has reestablished contact with its tiny helicopter on Mars, the U.S. Space Agency said on Saturday, after an unexpected outage prompted fear that the hard-working craft had finally met its end. So Ingenuity, a drone about 1.6 feet tall, arrived on Mars in 2021 aboard the rover Perseverance and became the first motorized craft to fly autonomously on another planet. Data from the helicopter transmitted by Perseverance back to Earth. The communications were suddenly lost during test flight on Thursday, Ingenuity's 72nd liftoff on Mars. Good news today, NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory, the JPL, wrote on X, formerly Twitter, late on Saturday. The agency said that contact had finally been made with the helicopter by commanding Perseverance to, quote, perform long-duration listening sessions for Ingenuity's signal. Well, the team is renewing the new data to better understand the unexpected communications dropout during Flight 72, it added. Well, NASA previously said that Ingenuity had attained an altitude of 40 feet on Flight 72, which was a quick pop-up vertical flight to check out the helicopter systems following an unlanding during its previous flight. But during its descent, communications between the helicopter and rover terminated early, prior to touchdown, the agency said. JPL had noted on Friday that Perseverance was temporarily out of line of sight with Ingenuity, but the team would consider driving closer for a visual inspection. In a response to a post on X asking if Ingenuity would be able to fly again, JPL said on Saturday that the team needs to assess the new data before that can be determined. Well, NASA lost contact with the helicopter before, including for an agonizing 2 months last year. The mini motorcraft, which weighs just about 4 pounds, has far exceeded its original goal of undertaking 5 flights over 30 days in the Red Planet. In all, it has covered just over 10 miles and reached altitudes of up to 79 feet. Its longevity has proved remarkable, particularly considering that it must survive glacially cold Martian nights, kept warm by the solar panels that recharge its batteries during daylight hours, and working with Perseverance, it has acted as an aerial scout to assist its wheeled companion in searching for possible signs of ancient microbial life. Unbelievable, isn't it? Truly amazing. Now, let me just quickly look and see what else is happening on the world stage. And bear with me a second here. One moment here. I want to go here. One second. All right. All right, 1 second. Well, this is important stuff. Bear with me a second here with regard to Boeing. The Boeing 739-900ER uses the same door plug design as the 737 MAX 9. It was grounded after the door of an Alaska Airlines plane blew out mid-flight. Boeing said it supports the new recommendation. Well, the U.S. Federal Aviation Authority, the FAA, has issued a new recommendation for airlines to check the door plugs on Boeing 737-900ER models after some operators reported issues with bolts during inspections. Well, the Boeing 737-900ER is separate to the 737 MAX 9 model that was grounded after a door blew out during the Alaska Airlines flight in January. But its fuselage features the same door plugs where an emergency exit would be if a plane had more seats. Well, the FAA issued the new, quote, safety alert for operators, end quote, late on Sunday after some airlines conducted their own checks and have noted findings with bolts during the maintenance inspection, end quote. It recommended that airlines perform key maintenance procedures related to the four bolts as soon as possible. Boeing said in an email to Reuters that, quote, we fully support the FAA and our customers in this action, end quote. According to Boeing, 505 of the 737-900ER models have been delivered worldwide. Three U.S. airlines operate the vast majority of the fleet, Delta Airlines, United Airlines, and Alaska Airlines. Delta said it, quote, elected to take proactive measures to inspect our 737-900ER fleet and does not anticipate any operational impacts. United also said its inspections are due, quote, to be completed in the next few days without disruption to our customers. Alaska Airlines said it began inspections several days ago and had no findings to date. It expects to complete the remainder of our 900ER fleet without disruption to our operations. Okay. Now, let me just quickly look. One second here. Well, Ryanair CEO says that Boeing's troubles could speed up the MAX 8 deliveries. Ryanair Chief Michael O'Leary has repeated his support for Boeing 737 MAX jets. He advised that a delay in the MAX 9 inspections could have an upside for his firm, faster delivery of other Boeing aircraft. Well, U.S. aircraft maker Boeing could deliver Ryanair more 737 MAX 8 aircraft by June without giving any concrete numbers, the budget carrier's boss Michael O'Leary advised in an interview. Well, Boeing declined to comment on O'Leary's assertion. Ryanair will still receive fewer MAX aircraft from Boeing than expected this year, O'Leary said. The airline was due to receive 57 Boeing MAX 8 before summer, but O'Leary recently told the Financial Times he expected that number to fall by 5 or 10 aircraft due to recent delays. O'Leary said Thursday that the number could now be improved, although he wasn't certain by how much. Well, we couldn't go up, but maybe we could get 52, 53, or 54 instead of 57, he said. Boeing had paused inspection of MAX 9 jets while it works with regulators following last week's incident involving a model of the aircraft operated by Alaska Airlines. A bolted panel blew off the fuselage mid-flight, forcing the crew to make an emergency landing. No one was seriously injured in the incident, but regulators quickly moved to ground the aircraft for further inspection. Well, the U.S. Federal Aviation Administration said that Boeing had been asked to revise instructions for how airlines should inspect the planes, meaning a longer wait before MAX 9s are allowed to fly again. Well, there is renewed focus on the MAX program. The incident has cast new attention on the MAX program. Regulators grounded Boeing's best-selling MAX 8 aircraft between 2019 and 2020 are two separate crashes, after two separate crashes killed 346 people. And those incidents were later connected to an automated control system known as MCAS, which Boeing then updated. Well, the Alaska Airlines incident followed other recent quality issues with the fuselage, including problems with tail fin fittings flagged by Boeing and improperly drilled holes in a rear bulkhead, and both issues were linked to a supplier, Spirit AeroSystem, which manufactures the MAX fuselage. Well, Ryanair operates exclusively Boeing aircraft, including the 737NG and 737 MAX. It has no MAX 9 in its fleet yet. O'Leary called the MAX, quote, the safest aircraft in the world, but said inspections have become an issue for Boeing. Quote, we occasionally find a wrench under a floorboard. Things are like that that shouldn't be happening, and it's a sign that Boeing needs to improve the quality control. O'Leary was in Berlin to meet with government officials and press for lower aircraft fees, airport fees, and taxes, a frequent complaint from the discount carrier. So that seems to be the issue. That's what's going on. I see it's about 14 minutes to the end of the hour, but that's where we have no more news to report. So tomorrow's another day, and hopefully you'll be able to join us then. Take care and be well. Thanks for being with us. What a pleasure and an honor. Thank you. And good day.